Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the munders.
Monday morning couldn't guarantee that Monday evening you would still be here with me.
What would you say you do here?
Monday, Monday, can't trust that day. Monday, Monday, sometimes it just turns out that way. Oh, Monday morning, you gave me no warning of what was to be. Oh, Monday, Monday, how could you leave and not take me?
I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand that? What the hell is wrong with you people?
Every other day of the week is fine, yeah. But whenever Monday comes, Monday, Monday, can't trust that day. Monday, Monday, it just turns out that way.
Another edition of The Gray Area begins.
Monday, Monday, won't go away.
You would think that if we had a show called The Gray Area, there would be a person on the show named Gray, and he will be here. I think I am 100% at fault for asking Gray, the resident barista here at WCQM, about 5 minutes before the show started. I just kind of indicated if he has anything caffeinated back there, thinking maybe he would just kind of whip something up. It usually takes about 90 seconds or so, and he's got something. So after I kind of made that request to him, I said, you got something caffeinated, we're struggling here this morning, he flew out the door and was gone. And I don't know if he'll be back. I'm not sure. Oh, wait a minute, he is coming back with ingredients to make the requested
caffeinated. I don't have it yet, but I got the pieces.
If I only would have known that my request for something caffeinated would have included a run to the grocery store.
NEM. I know. NEM.
I'm not sure.
I got lost in the Super One.
My only wish is that I would have done it maybe about a minute later.
I ran. I was running through the Super One. I still didn't make it. I just got milk. I don't have coffee.
It looks like you even got something out of the reduce section,
I did.
Is nice.
I'll tell you what, Joel, that reduce section, I can't say enough about it, but it's not any speedier than grabbing you a gallon and just going.
So you made it in probably less than 5 minutes from the radio station to Super One and back. You went through the self-checkout lane, I'm assuming?
Nope. They're not open this early. I don't think they open the self-checkouts until, well, maybe they were and I just didn't notice, but Armand. Right. Shout out to Armand, who checked me out very quickly, efficiently.
Armand is the man.
Yes, 100%.
Yes, I apologize. My request for something caffeinated was probably too late.
No, it immediately triggered poor decision-making. I don't think you can accept the blame. I truly thought I had a chance not to actually make the beverage, but at least get back in time and claim that, and then I'm thinking after the first commercial break, we'll be able to.
Well, Rachel had the best response to this. When you said, I'm going out, Rachel gave the wave like, he'll be all right. night and you blew her off, and I appreciate your dedication.
Oh, no, that's, I'm only sorry I failed, but I've got the milk. We will have the coffee soon. I did dairy-free coffee last week. That was, I mean, the good reviews, but not to my taste. So
the gray area is off and running in an interesting way. And a Monday, this is kind of how Mondays start sometimes, right? They start a little bit hectically. We got a lot of stuff on the menu today, and I wanted to start off a little bit to lead into this golf topic, because you and Big G and Gary, I believe Gary was out there too.
No, it was just the two of us yesterday, but a lot of Big G's family did show up. His son Dan was there with a bunch of his friends and one of Big G's nephews. So it was just me and Big G and Rachel as a group of three, and Rachel was just kind of tagging along.
Golfing.
And then they had like six people behind us. So it was awesome. We had a big group behind us that was still faster than us, but they didn't mind that we were slow because they were family, and there was nobody ahead of us because we were also slow. So.
And if you go out to the Park Falls Country Club today and you notice a smoke in the air, it's not from the wildfires. That's from Mr. Greg Gunderson lighting up the course yesterday, baby. That's right. That's right. It's just a trail of smoke out there right now from the way you smoked that course yesterday.
Yesterday was that round you hoped for me. I don't mind gloating a little bit because it wasn't all me. Like, yes, I was trying my best, absolutely, but it got to the point where after five holes of it going that well, like, I did well enough in the first half that it relaxed me for the second half. When I normally would have gotten tired and started making mistakes, it's just like, no, just do exactly what you've been doing. And for some reason, saying that actually worked.
And anybody who's golf has had that round of golf, or you know that that round of golf exists with, you know, some skill, maybe a little luck of the bounce here and there, maybe a rare shot.
So much
luck. Where you can shoot, you know, 7-8 shots better than you normally do. You had a chip-in birdie.
A chip-in birdie on 8, which, I mean, right. 8's a nice straight hole, but I actually, beautiful drive on 8, and then I pulled my iron shot left, so I almost put it in the water, couple feet of room there, and I chipped it in from there, and I thought, let's save bogey, and I wound up with the birdie, but I actually shaved 6 strokes off of my personal best score ever.
Wow.
Like, my best 9 holes. I'm kind of sitting here thinking, boy, that's never going to happen again. Like, if I couldn't ever shave 6 strokes off of what I did yesterday. At that point, I'm like, phew.
And you had a tee shot, you told me, at number 5 that would make any lumberjack envious, because you came in and out of the woods faster than a lumberjack on a lot of coffee. Brew me up here.
Exactly. So if anybody who knows hole 5, that is, I think, the longest hole of the course. I don't think 7 is quite there. Hole 5, there's a big dip between the two tee boxes, and on the second tee box is a tree, so there's all kinds of psychological barriers when you're standing there on the long tee, and it's like, boy, just get around that tree that's right in my face, just hit a straight shot. I mean, every tee box, a straight shot will do you well, but 7's tougher. And I did not hit a straight drive, Joel. I hit a very bad drive. And I mean 5. My bad. 5. Hole 5.
So were you left or right?
Right. I went right, and yeah. I put it, if somebody was standing on the ladies' tees, I would have scared the heck out of them because of smacking the tree right behind them, or whichever direction they're facing, right next to that ladies' tee
right,
box.
Right.
But somehow it missed the trunk of the tree. It hit the ground at the right angle to pop out on the other side of the ladies' tee box in the fairway, and I ended up bogeying that hole, which, for me, bogey golf is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah. So I was hoping for a 45 yesterday, and I did that, and I did a little bit better. I don't want to reveal just how bad I am to say that I shaved 6 strokes. I'll let you know that much, but I don't want to tell you what I scored.
Hey, 40s, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with the 40s.
I don't mind. It was a 43. I managed to shave from a 49 as my PR at Park Falls. Actually, ever. I don't think I've done better than 49 on 9 holes.
Yeah, and I personally, I don't golf. Anytime I golf, 40s is my goal. If I can keep it in the 40s, because I just don't golf enough to really get too concerned about it,
that
I'm going to shoot whatever it may be. But yeah, I mean, that's respectable. You're shooting bogey plus plus one on a couple holes here.
Yeah,
there.
Well, I mean, so 50 is my goal, at least at this course. Big G and I golf league over at Phillips, and I have all kinds of problems with that course. I'm just not good at playing that course, but my first round over there was a 52, so I thought I was kind of on track this year, and then I put up a 58 last week because I had a really bad hole and a bad day, but like, basically, I'm that between 50 and 60 on nine holes guy where, yeah, if my score starts with a four, I'm automatically happy. It's like I'm paying $49.99 instead of $50.
See, there's courses, if you just think about the way you, as a golfer, the way you hit the ball, the way maybe you slice the ball or fade the ball, that certain courses are harder for people, some people, than they are in others. For me, the Park Falls course, for me, is a little bit harder than Phillips because I'm a lefty.
Yep.
And on hole five and hole six and hole seven, if you're left, you're in trouble. You're in a lot of trouble on those holes, and you're even out of bounds. And when I'm not hitting the ball well, I'll slice it, and it'll go that way. Versus when you tee off at Phillips, there's not very much left out of bounds in Phillips. A lot of it is right out of bounds in Phillips. So
that's
for
my issue.
So for my fading and slicing game, Phillips to me plays a little bit easier than Park Falls does, but it may be the opposite for others.
Well, and even in Phillips, when there is water and there's a relatively high number of holes with water, there's often an open space to the left of some kind. Sometimes there's a little bit of relief to the right, but no, you're very correct. Phillips in particular is a little bit more forgiving for the lefty. I won't say it's too much more punishing for the righty than Park Falls is, but it is more punishing just because, like you said, where the boundary holes are and the way you go around. When you're on the boundaries of Phillips, you're playing counterclockwise. When you're on the boundaries of Park Falls, you're playing clockwise.
Right.
And that's exactly why it favors lefties versus righties. So it's just a matter of which way they organize the course. So I don't know who I have to thank for that, but Phillips just, it kind of eats me alive a little bit, and the water's in all the perfect places. But no, I was, like I said, I'm a 50s to 60s guy. I've carded a 58 this summer already, and I wasn't too surprised. So like a 43?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
And like I told you this morning, I'm already sitting there thinking of how I could have been three shots better, and I need to smack myself on the back of the hand and be like, dude, that was the round.
Yeah, that was what a triple bogey on the last hole, right?
I took a seven on hole nine. I put three threes on that card, but two of them were pars on the par threes. That said, I don't par those par threes. I'm not good at my home course, man. It's bad.
Oh, but hey, parring par threes for anyone who doesn't golf a lot is very difficult because the first shot has got to be on the green, basically, unless you're really relying on a really good chip shot, which if you don't golf, that touch thing is really, really, really hard. So par threes are they're just, you see it and you're like, well, I should be able to get a three on this, and your first shot goes 20 yards. Just like, well, now you're in trouble there, young man. You're in trouble.
Well, and not only was I actually getting good contact off the tee, I mean, like, funny enough, so I've been golfing for 15, 16 years now, and last year I finished off on a major uptick. Like my last three rounds were a lot better. And there was one thing that I was doing, and I knew it was a huge thing, and I knew I was going to carry it into this year, and I wanted to start strong. And I've been golfing for 15 years. What do you think that one thing is, Joel? What is the one thing that I was able to shave six strokes off my PR?
Is it in like a general swing of like a drive, or is it a putt, or is it a short game?
One general swing mechanic that doesn't apply to putting so much, but your general irons and woods swing, your long swings.
I'll go with what I always taught my kids when I taught golf is I always taught them to trail the ball. Keep your eye down and trail the ball. Don't ever look up past the ball.
That's essentially 100% correct. At the end of last year, I realized that I don't know if I'd ever actually seen the club strike the ball.
There you go. Yeah.
Golf for 15 years, and I realized I was doing it with a blindfold on. I was like, wait a minute, am I closing my eyes or am I looking up that fast?
Yeah.
And Brian Eimerman, I am so sorry. I know you tried to get me to ask myself that question for so many hours. I don't know why I couldn't. All I can say is until a man is 23, his brain is not fully developed. I'm hoping that has something to do with why I can suddenly keep my darn head down.
Yeah, if you're just an average golfer, trail the ball. It's all I can say is let your eyes always be behind the ball. Don't look ahead of it because bad things will happen.
Trail
the ball.
Yeah, if you listen to me mutter myself as I address the ball, just you'll hear me say things like, watch the strike. Like, actually watch it. see the club, because if you can see the club striking the ball, if you can watch it happen, that means you're doing like three or four key things that have to happen for it to go decently.
Yeah, and that leads to me into one of the joys of golf that I discovered last weekend, and that is not only the hole in one. Now, the hole in one obviously is a very hard thing to get, and I saw that our Shawamigan baseball coach Jake Herbst had a hole in one this past weekend out at the Park Falls Country Club, and
I saw him start his round yesterday. Was it yesterday?
He posted a post on Facebook. Yeah.
I didn't. Oh man! Yeah, shout out to you.
He had his young son with him out there on the course. So
no, I saw him kicking off his round with the crew yesterday. They were looking like they were having just a nice, fun Sunday round. Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
I'm not 100% sure if it was that one or Thursday, Friday,
either
Saturday,
way.
Whatever it was. But yeah, and the hole in one is the most elusive. I've never had one. I came within literally like a roll of a ball a couple of times. But I found, watching top 10 plays on ESPN, that I found especially more joy in the backspin hole in one. Now, there's a hole in one where you hit it and it like either goes in the air or one bounce and clink, it hits and goes in, which is equally as special. But there's something about that professional golfer hitting that shot about 15, 20 feet past the hole. It hits, it grabs, it spins, and then there's about a 5 to 10 second trickle of the ball where you're like, it might, it could. It's that anticipation that you don't have when you hit it straight into the hole. It's just like everybody's like, and the crowd is building. They're like, oh, and then it goes in. It may be one of the most joyous moments in the game of golf, the backup hole in one.
I think it's the commentator's delight. You know, what's better? Not only can you see what's coming, you've got enough time to mention it and to ride that wave that's happening. And part of it for me, for a golfer like me, I don't get backspin like that. Like, I'm like I just said, I golf 43s. So if you know what kind of golfer that is, that's not somebody, you know, when a good golfer hits a drive and it goes whoosh, and you can just hear it pushing air because it's spinning. I don't do that. That doesn't happen to me. So it's like seeing really good golfers do stuff like it, apply that backspin, and knowing it so well that they can actually not only aim where the ball will land, but then roll. I'm just trying to hit the green. Like, I'm literally aiming for the largest part of the green because that gives me the largest statistical odds of actually landing it there. And I'm still missing most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, that is a level of skill that it's just, that's like watching somebody fly. It's just, nope, I'm never gonna, but it's really cool to watch.
And one thing that I mentioned this to my son many times is that when you watch golf on TV, notice how large the greens are. Now, that's the hardest thing to maintain on a golf course is a green. It's the hardest thing to maintain because it's just short grass and a lot of maintenance to it. And the Augustas and stuff like that. I mean, the greens are huge.
Yeah.
They're huge. Not that you and I would score any better because the rest of the course is really, really hard. But when you're at the Park Falls Country Club or Westwood and you're 30, 40 feet right of the pin, you're probably in a sand trap or on grass. But, and these big PGA courses, when you're 30, 40 feet to the right of the pin, you're still on the green.
Yep.
You're on the green. So that is one part of those large, big courses that you see on TV that is much more forgiving, is the size of the putting area.
I was actually just reading something last night about somebody, it was just a casual fan on a forum, but talking about how they regard LPGA, ladies pro golf, as the purest current form of golf on TV, or that you can watch in media, simply because they're not max double XL sizing the distances of the sizes of the greens, of the size of the length of the fairways. Like, the holes are reasonable length to what the average player might actually play. Mm-hmm. So you're actually getting to see golfers use strategies like pushing themselves a little bit. Like, it's not all out all the time because some cleverness might save you a stroke, instead of distance, distance, distance. Like, it's not Bryson DeChambeau winning every single LPGA tournament.
Scheffler, yeah. Scheffler is too good right now.
Right, exactly. So you'll actually see some variety. You'll see some turnover. And so, like, I think a lot of casual fans, or maybe people who aren't watching necessarily, will look at that and say, well, there's no Tiger right now. There's no Scheffler. They need that. No, they don't need that. It's fun because they don't have that, because there's new strategies and new bold ideas that are emerging and floating to the top.
All right, we'll talk about one of the greatest sitcoms of all time and a little breakfast cereal and whatever else we delve up. More of the Gray Area coming up here on 98Q Country at 8:31. Let's get you an update right now on the news.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A 45-year-old man in custody in Boulder, Colorado, after police say he unleashed an attack on pro-Israel marchers. The man tossing makeshift Molotov cocktails, leaving 8 people hurt, one of them hospitalized in critical condition with burns. ABC's Alex Stone is there.
This is a community that knows tragedy, unfortunately. It was only a few years ago an active shooter killed 10 victims at a King Soopers grocery store just down the street. Now Boulder is dealing with this. The victims burned by a makeshift blowtorch and Molotov cocktails. The victims ranging from 52 to 88 years old. One is critically injured.
Gaza officials say 14 people were killed overnight in an Israeli airstrike on a residential building. Delegations from Russia and Ukraine are meeting in Turkey as their second round of peace talks get underway. However, expectations are low for any significant progress on ending the war, Ukraine launching a massive attack on Russian targets over the weekend. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Austin Bermain. Here's what Northern Wisconsin needs to know. Brought to you by Marthaler Chevrolet of Minocqua, your trusted hometown dealer for new Chevrolet vehicles and service. According to a press release from the Taylor County Sheriff's Office, on Sunday, June 1st, at approximately 6:15 a.m., the Taylor County Sheriff's Office Dispatch Center received a 911 call reporting a one-vehicle crash on Gibson Drive, north of Stetson Avenue, in the town of Little Black, Taylor County. The caller reported that there was a severely injured male subject who appeared to have been ejected from the vehicle. Taylor County deputies, along with Medford EMS, Stetsonville First Responders, and Stetsonville Fire Department, were dispatched to the scene. Emergency responders found a black Dodge Ram 1500 pickup truck overturned onto its roof, with extensive damage to all areas, located in the east ditch of Gibson Drive. Nearby, a male subject was located outside the vehicle and was determined to be deceased. Preliminary investigation indicates the Dodge truck was traveling northbound on Gibson Drive at a high rate of speed when it veered into the east ditch, struck a driveway embankment, and became airborne. The vehicle then landed in a field where it overturned and came to rest on its top. Based on the preliminary investigation, it appears that speed and alcohol were factors contributing to the crash. There were no other occupants in the vehicle at the time of the crash. This incident is still under investigation. Summer has arrived, which means the Park Falls Community Pool will be opening. The pool will open Monday, June 9th, and registration for swim lessons is June 5th and 6th between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. at the community pool. An amazing team of lifeguards is super excited for a great year at the pool, and they can't wait to ensure you and your kids have a safe and fun summer. They'll be featuring things such as lap swimming, water aerobics, along with many other fun events over the summer. For more information, you can find them on Facebook under Park Falls Community Pool. Once again, Monday, June 9th, the Park Falls Community Pool will be opening, and June 5th and 6th, between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. at the pool, are the times to register for swim lessons. 3 Northeast Wisconsin students have placed in the top 0.5% of students in the country. Lisa Hale has more.
One Oshkosh West High School junior did what less than 0.25% of American students can do each year. He achieved a perfect score of 36 on his ACTs. Roman Stonick credits his hours of studying and participation in the math team with his success. Two of his classmates, Aria Bowler and Samuel Kirshner, each earned an impressive score of 35. All are outstanding academic achievements and place the students from Oshkosh among the top students nationwide.
I'm Austin Bermain. This has been Civic Media News on 98Q Country. For more news, visit 98QCountry.com or civicmedia.us.
It's the Brewers and the Reds. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Reds open a 3-game series in Cincinnati tonight. Yesterday, the Brewers with a 5-2 win over the Phillies to complete their first sweep in Philadelphia in 10 years. This despite a shaky start from lefty Jose Quintana, manager Pat Murphy.
Quintana didn't have his best outing, walking 3 guys early. I think they all scored, or 2 of them scored, and then gets hit in the knee, but then responds and gives us 2 good innings. Our bullpen was challenged him in the zone. This is a really good team. Yeah, best record in the National League.
Pitcher Tyler Alexander designated for assignment. NFL, Packers resuming OTA practices this week in Green Bay. In golf, 25-year-old Maya Stark of Sweden finished 7 under par to win the Women's U.S. Open at Erin Hills in Wisconsin.
It's so cool just looking at all the names on this trophy. And I mean, I love the U.S. Opens, and I'm so happy that it's mine now.
That's Maya Stark with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Medicare loses about $60 billion annually to fraud, errors, and abuse. June 2nd through the 8th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Learn more by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
This update sponsored by UW Credit Union. For every stage of life, UW Credit Union is here for every you. Kids and seniors, Courts wants to see you at American Family Field. On select weekday home games, kids 14 and under and seniors 60 plus can save 50% on tickets. Following the game, seniors may stroll along the outfield warning track. Visit brewers.com/kidsandseniors to learn more. Join UW Credit Union at uwcu.org. Insured by NCUA.
Better begins with the way we live life together, the way we help each other, and the way we inspire and encourage one another. At Aspirus Health, better begins with our dedication to providing expert care that improves lives, establishing healthy families and healthy communities, yours and ours, for a lifetime. Life is a journey, and we're here for you. Better begins at Aspirus Health. Passion for excellence, compassion for people.
We're going to have more of that smoky haze in the sky today. Otherwise, partly cloudy, warm and breezy with a high in the low 90s this afternoon. Showers and thundershowers tonight and tomorrow. There could be some locally heavy rain of a half inch or more. High tomorrow in the upper 60s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 52.
The Gray Area with Joel and Gray, and Gray is here for segment two. Look at that.
Hey, right. We got the coffee, too. It got done.
We got coffee. We are ready. We are ready to roll into segment two of The Gray Area. You can hear archives of this at 98qcountry.com. I want to talk a little bit about breakfast cereal today because I came to the realization yesterday that everybody has their favorite breakfast cereal. We're not sure why or hows, or mine used to be Fruit Loops, but I stumbled upon one called Waffle Crisp a couple years ago. That is, I'm sure, not any good for anybody to be consuming, but it's absolutely delicious.
Yep, that's one of those buttery, cinnamony kind of ones.
Oh,
yeah.
It's everything is advertised. You would expect the taste of a waffle and Waffle Crisp, and you put milk in there, and it's... It is. It is that. It
well,
is.
There's.
Oh yeah.
There's definitely sugar in Waffle Crisp.
Oh, you think so?
Breaking news. One of its large constituent pieces. One of the reasons you love Waffle Crisp.
Favorite breakfast cereal for Greg Gunderson?
Oh, you know. Why have I not been thinking of this since you brought this topic up? We currently have s'mores, like the Malt-O-Meal bag version of s'mores cereal.
Oh, yeah.
And which is basically actually Golden Grahams with some Cocoa Puffs and some marshmallows thrown in. That's actually brilliant. Like some thrown together s'mores cereal. Take your Golden Grahams, your Cocoa Puffs, and throw some dehydrated marshmallows. You got a darn good s'mores cereal.
You have a feeling that somewhere in a factory it happened by mistake, and they were like, hey.
Yeah, like, hey, we've got what are we going to do? Some clever person just thought, well, we've got s'mores cereal there. But yeah, that's probably among the favorites. I'm still very much not out of the childish phase of cereal. I like your Honey Bunches of Oats, and actually, you know what? Underrated cereal, I'm going to go there. Raisin Bran.
Yeah, it's good. It's
Raisin Bran.
And somewhat healthy for you, too.
Rachel's giving me the big thumbs down. Like, that was the most violent thumbs down I've ever seen from this woman.
I thought Rachel would be into raisin. Really?
No, she clearly abhors the Raisin Bran.
Well, it's good for you. As you get older, you appreciate the fiber and Raisin Bran. I'll tell you that much right now. Raisin Bran is good. And are you a morning-only cereal guy, or will 7 or 8 at night? Will you delve into the breakfast cereal area for a little late night snack?
You know, I will say 5 or 10 years ago, I would have been a resounding yes, late cereal all the time. But I'm doing a little bit better for myself, and I put a little bit more. You know, honestly, I'm going to say it. My mental health is better, so I don't eat as much cereal late in the day. And there are people out there eating cereal at 7 p.m. for no bad reason out there. That was not me. You know, like, there's people out there sitting on their kitchen floor eating ice cream right now at 10 a.m. and they're doing just fine. But most people doing that are not. And I was in category B.
8 o'clock. Monday morning, eating ice cream on your kitchen. I'm thinking that that's not a good. But
see, that's my point. Like, does it have to be a bad day? No.
It doesn't have to
be. And maybe there's somebody out there celebratorily sitting alone eating ice cream at 9 a.m., but chances are it's not very celebratory if you're doing that.
But breakfast cereal is kind of a staple of America. I don't know what they do in other countries, but I think it is a staple of America. It's just, I don't know, it's a simple way to have something in the morning. And you have the option. There is healthy stuff. I mean, it's not all bad for you. There is some good stuff in there too.
Yeah, honestly, I'm a bit cynical. You know, I'm a little bit cynical. So, like, if you look back at history, the phrase "the most important meal of the day" was actually a marketing pitch by Kellogg.
Well, of course.
So, or was it General Mills? Honestly, it doesn't matter. It was a cereal company to hype up the idea that you've got to eat a good meal in the morning. Now, is there something to the idea that you've got to get good nutrition to start your day, to fuel yourself correctly? Oh yeah, absolutely. If you even know what the word macros means in context of food, you know that the timing of it matters as much as what it is in many cases. But like, no. We eat a lot of breakfast cereal because we all fell for it in 1955.
We're all a product of just being in patterns of doing certain things.
Yes. Yep.
Whether it be the breakfast cereal or whatever it may be, I found when I was younger, I smoked a little bit, not a lot, but I smoked a little bit. And I found that the hardest part about quitting smoking was not the nicotine in the cigarette. It was the daily routine of getting in the car and having that right there, like getting up in the morning and having a bowl of cereal or whatever it may be, getting into that mental procedure. And that's what the cereal industry did to us back in the 50s. They said, hey, wake up in the morning, what's the first thing you're going to think of? I want some Fruit Loops.
Oh yeah. Any psychologist or psychiatrist will tell you that routines create comfort. You know, those people who do the same 25 things every day, they derive comfort from that. Their life is more comfortable, safer, more pleasurable because of that. But also, any sociologist, someone who studies groups of people, will tell you that anytime you have something that works for a length of time, that will create the illusion that it's the best way or sometimes even the only right way to do a thing. And the longer something's around, the harder it is to question the idea that, is there a better way? There are names for these ideas. It's a mistake people make when arguing all the time called the appeal to antiquity. Just because it's old, just because we've been doing it for a long time, that doesn't mean squat. You know, like, if we discovered tomorrow that there should be a hole in the front of our shirt for some new interesting reason, you know, there would be people that would categorically deny whatever that reason is, because why would you add another hole to a shirt? Like, and like, I get you on that. It's just a stupid example. But like, no, it's really easy to get trapped in that line of thinking.
And Toby agrees. Speaking of being a pattern to do things, Toby loves to greet people at the door, and that's what he does.
Oh, we got Big G weighing in too. Big G has proclaimed, weighing in, Honey Nut Cheerios with bananas.
Oh, bananas in the cereal, I'm a big guy. I like strawberries, but I don't like strawberries in my cereal. I don't like berries in my cereal, but bananas, I'm all in.
What about raisins, adding extra raisins to the Raisin Bran?
No.
No. What?
No, I just leave it alone.
Why not? But like, would you? Like,
No, I'm good. I'm trusting what they put in there.
That's basically just Raisin Plus brand. You know, like, you're kind of, it's like Doritos nacho cheesier, you know, like you can just, you turn it, it goes up to 11, man. Like, you can, why not add extra raisins to the Raisin Bran? But, like, I can't give you a reason that you should, but I'm struggling to find a reason that you wouldn't.
To me, that's the concept of having a chaser drink at the bar. Just like, no, just one's good. I don't need another one to go with it.
It is just a sneaky way to add more sugar. You know, what was it? The Country Hearth Breads guy will tell you that raisin juice is just sweetener after all. So that's what when I add extra raisins to my Raisin Bran, I'm trying to make it more like Lucky Charms.
And then the other day I stumbled upon Cinnamon Toast Crunch Bacon.
Okay, hold on. In what space, where are you existing and spending your time that it's even possible to, whoops, there's candy-coated bacon. Like, what are you doing with your free time?
Well, the Cinnamon Toast Crunch Bacon existed in the sale area of either Super One or Walmart, and that's where my wife lives, and that's where I followed her, and that's where it was. So
you should have led with that, because I'm less compelled to make fun of you there. I will always spend time in the reduced section of any store I'm in. I'm a clearance experience junkie, and I usually, like, I don't even buy stuff. I just like looking at it. Like, I love looking at what other people chose not to buy. What's filtered through the fingertips of thousands? Yeah, that's 47 cents for a good reason, I think. Like, you can often tell. There's not much mystery in that section.
Yeah, and I really, the only thing I noticed about Cinnamon Toast Crunch Bacon was the fact that it was just a little bit sweeter. That's about it. So
you tried it?
Oh yeah, my wife found it in the discount area somewhere, and we had something, and she said, "Oh, that's Cinnamon Toast Crunch Bacon," and just it kind of had a sweet taste to it, like you'd add a maple syrup or something to it because it was a sugar.
Well, yeah, maple bacon. Okay, so question: was this a clearance refrigerator?
I think so. I'm not sure where. I can't keep track of all the sale areas my wife goes to anymore. I don't know.
Well, when I think of discount food sections, I think of the two at Walmart that I can think of because I can't immediately picture the one at Super One. I think sometimes they'll use carts and stuff or they'll do different things. But like Super One, they've got these two shelves, one by bakery, one with some bakery on it and the other one with everything else. They're unrefrigerated. So I'm absolutely picturing you, or I guess in this case, Shayna. Sorry, Shayna, I can't shake this image. If somebody, one of you two, walking up to an unrefrigerated pile of cinnamon, sugary, sticky bacon at room temperature, just be like, yeah, that looks like a good idea.
The price is number one. That wins out. Yeah, it may have been from Cloverdale down in Curtis, too. That's a good place for, that's a whole another story for another day. We lost a sitcom. I don't know. Sitcom might not be the way to describe MASH. Have you ever watched MASH before?
A little bit, yeah.
The Korean War based sitcom with Alan Alda, and we lost Loretta Swit, who was known as Hot Lips Houlihan on the show MASH, and that was for its era. In the early 70s, maybe mid-late 70s, was was the number one show, and the final episode of that was, for the time, the most watched show ever on the history of TV. But it's great comedy. Alan Alda, I don't think he gets credit as being a comedic genius for what he did on that show, because it's a legendary show. If you haven't watched MASH, check it out.
I've watched some breakdowns of Hawkeye Pierce, and like one of the most poignant moments in television is his speech about the difference between war and hell, given while he's conducting field surgery on some soldier. But like the delivery on that, not just the concept and like what an incredible idea, the topic, the writing was astounding, but Alan Alda's performance, like to be a soldier conducting surgery as a field surgeon and talking about those topics, I have no idea what any of those things are like. I've never seen a battlefield. God willing, I never will. I've never had to fix up a fellow human being in any medical context. God willing, I never will. But like at the same time, watching that, it was so easy for me to believe that he understood what he was talking about, what he was doing, what he was portraying. And like Alan Alda's never been in the middle of any of those things for real, I don't believe.
Yeah, and they had, you know, they had the Hogan's Heroes, which came out after World War II, which was just head scratching that show was even allowed to exist, but it was funny. But then when you had MASH was not just a comedy. There were, like you said, there were a lot of things intertwined into the message of the show.
Yeah.
Where it didn't feel like you were getting politics shoved down your throat.
No.
But there was definitely some hard facts and opinions about the Korean War within that show, and immediately followed by a great line by Klinger, who was dressed as a woman, a man, you know, and it was kind of like the Seinfeld of that era. It really was the perfect show at that time.
Yeah, looking back, I mean, and actually Rachel and I are experiencing something kind of similar where we're actually watching and not a family show on Netflix, 6 Feet Under, and that is, it's actually like five or six different shows kind of rolled up into one, and it's pretty kooky here and there. But there's things that stand out, and like we've both had moments where it's like, man, what year is this show from? And it's over 20 years. I think it's right about 20 years old now. It's like, that sounds like they wrote it last month. Like, it sounds like they're borrowing from current conversations in a show, and MASH is the same. Like, you watch MASH now, and you'll hear a lot of overlap with current debates. Like, if you debate any philosophy at all, and if you've ever talked seriously about what war is, what it means, like, MASH did that. And you know what? Its predecessor, or maybe it was around the same time. What was the timing of Blackadder? Do you know Blackadder?
No.
So Blackadder is I'd probably anger a lot of people to say that it's the English version of MASH. I don't know which one came first, but it was Rowan Atkinson, known by many as Mr. Bean.
Okay.
And it was a very similar thing. They were fighting war, but, well, wait, is that...
Mr. Bean.
Blackadder, not to be confused, is a series of four period British sitcoms. Okay, so maybe it wasn't all war. I think one part of Blackadder was that they were in World War One, and like it was a comedy. It's Rowan Atkinson, it's Mr. Bean, like it's kind of a farcical comedy.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like the last episode of Blackadder is them going over the top. Like they're actually about to go charge into no man's land, and the humor is just gone. Just totally gone. And like if I think a lot of people should just check out the last couple scenes of Blackadder, because it's a comedic actor very clearly struck by the seriousness of his topic.
All right, this is the Gray Area. Gray there, Joel here. We do this every Monday morning just to get your week off on kind of a light note, and we don't talk politics or any stuff like that. Just we talk life. We talk about the idea of pens around the office place.
The tide of
pens. And I have to we're going to wrap up today's show with this because I'm interested to see where this thought process is going here.
This was just a simple realization I had the other day, which is that junky pens, those cheap pens, those Bics with the chewed off caps and the pieces missing and the what color is this? Why is the outside of that blue? Like... they move in a tide, and I don't know if it's like in swarms or herds or flocks or packs, but you never have just the right number of junky pens.
What is a group of pens called?
A box, a case. It's probably something super boring.
Let's see what AI has to say about it.
A group of pens is called... A bunch or a collection.
Okay. Yeah.
One Facebook thread even suggests terms like a scribble or a spattering.
Ooh, a scribble of pens.
I like a scribble. So at any given time, there may or may not be a scribble moving nearby. I suspect they do under the carpet maneuvers or something, because you never see them change location. But have you ever had just the right number of junky pens? No, it's either, where's that stupid pen? Because I keep my nicer ones where I'll be able to remember to put them back. But sometimes I don't want to use. I just want to scribble something. You know, I need a Bic kind of thing. And where are they? Alternatively, and the only other side of the coin is that, where did all these dang pens come from? Like, exactly. What the heck?
Who hit the garage sale? Because we went for years here. Nancy Johnson was a garage sale lady. She still is a garage sale lady. So she would, there was always be pens at the station when Nancy was here. And most of them were probably one sentence away from going completely dry, and you had to throw it away. I've never thrown away so many pens in my life, because she'll go to a garage sale, and there will be a Ziploc bag full of pens for a buck, and she'll buy it, which is logical. I'm all right with that.
Yeah, totally.
And there are pens everywhere. We currently don't have that person at the station right now. I'll admit, when I go to garage sales, I am kind of looking for them. but you're right. We do go through those points of life where you go through stretches, and it just seems like there's pens everywhere. You're putting them away. And then a month later, all of a sudden, you'll be walking around looking left and right and up and down. Does anybody have a pen?
Yeah.
Well, somebody.
And I'm aware I definitely battle my environment more than most people. Like, I've spent 2 months at a time wondering how I'm always one charger cord short of what I need. It's like, is this me? Is it my phone? Did I move any of these? How does it always seem like wherever I am, I don't have a charger cord?
Yes.
And I've only ever moved one this week. But somehow three of them are out of place. Anyway.
And if go ahead.
No, it's the same thing. It's the tide of junky pens. I don't move them. I don't see them move, but they're never where they ought to be.
And if you live on this planet long enough, you'll go through that short stretch of life where you pick up a pen, you start to write, and it runs out, and you give it the... You know, you give it the whack, it doesn't work. Toby just barked. You throw the pen away, you grab the next pen, you write two more words, and you throw it away. You go through that two or three pen run where you're just like, really? Yep. Every pen's going to be this
way. Well, then you find out that it might be the surface under the paper, so you slide another piece of paper underneath, and the first one that didn't work now works, so were there actually three broken pens, or just one broken human being, and I'm definitely that. Anyway,
How quick do you give up on a pen, depending on how the day is going?
Not as fast as I give up on myself, Joel.
Some people will just flick the pen. I usually... sometimes I'll even, the pen will not work and I'll whack it and I'll throw it over there and then I'll grab a different pen and then I'll come back to it thinking, well, maybe it was just the temperature in the room.
No. I think of the pen that's not working right now as that plucky kid from the 90s Disney movie. Like, just keep pushing, man. If you just want it bad enough, bam, you get a nice clean letter out of it. It might be the last one it ever produces, but you made it happen, man. You got that moment. Fist pump in the air as Kenny Loggins picks up in the distance. The credits roll. You win.
We have solved nothing today, but we've had a lot of fun. I hope our listeners have enjoyed it. Every Monday morning at 8, we just get the week off on a fun note, get laughing, and do the little gray area. Thank you, sir.
Victory is in the air.
Thank you, Greg. Greg Gunderson, he'll be in this afternoon from 2 to 7.
Hey, Green Goblin here. So you've got a clogged drain.